We are officially recording.
I take it that means that we're back with your chair moving all over the place. More chair squeaking.
I had to be able to face chair.
Morbid Curiosity contains strong language and disturbing content with possible trigger warnings.
It is intended for a mature audience, 18 years and older. Listener discretion is advised.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Here we go now. Hi. Hello. I don't know why I just sounded like a
prepubescent.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, that's exactly what I sounded
Could
like.
Could you please say it?
Nope. I was going to do it and then no, just not going to do it. Not going to do it.
One of these days you're going to say prepubescent.
Prepubescent?
There See? We go. You say it correctly.
The thing is I have to like truly sit, like slow down my speech and think about it before I say the word.
Try saying prepubescent without a lisp. Lisp.
Isn't it odd that the word lisp is not fair to people with lisps?
It's not. It's because you're basically saying lisp.
Right.
Lisp.
Welcome to Morbid Curiosity, a podcast about the darker side of life.
Guys, why in the world did they make the word lisp so difficult to pronounce for people with a lisp?
So yeah, we are back. Hello. It has been a very, very long time since we have sat down and recorded Morbid Curiosity.
What was it, May the last time?
May of what is now last year.
May of 2018. Almost an entire year has gone by.
Yes. Do you want to tell our listening audience why it is that we were unable to record?
I don't know if you can hear it in my voice, but we were speaking about lisps.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of have one still.
Hey, Lisette here for DNews. The scientific term for a lisp is sigmatism, which is the mispronunciation of sibilant sounds. Sounds like s's, z's, sh's, and so on. When people have trouble pronouncing one or more of these sounds, they're said to have a lisp. And about 10% of people in the U.S. have a functional speech disorder, which includes lisp. A common misconception is that people of certain groups or that speak certain languages have a lisp. But lisps actually have to do with difficulty in saying certain words correctly. As we all come in different shapes and sizes, we all have variations in how our teeth are positioned, how long our tongue is, and how long our lingual frenulum is. That's a creepy looking tissue that connects our tongue to the bottom of our mouths. Lisps can occur when the configuration of your mouth, teeth, and tongue are less than ideal to produce certain sounds required by speech, although they can also form out of habit. The trickiest sounds for people with a lisp to pronounce tend to be the s, z, r, l, and th sounds. These are typically the result of one or more of the four most common types of lisp. The interdental lisp, when the s or z sounds end up sounding like th, happens when your tongue sticks out between your front teeth. If you had these teeth knocked out when you were a kid, you may have had a lisp temporarily. So something like seashells would sound like fifelf. A dentalized lisp is similar to the interdental lisp, but instead of having your tongue protrude through the teeth, it just presses against the front teeth, which can make certain sounds seem muffled.
And the funny story is, after May, I had a few issues with my teeth. From what I heard, thanks to having had the gastric bypass surgery in 2000.
Fair enough.
And malnutrition, I found that a few of my teeth began to grow weak and started to crumble. Oh my God, I'm losing my teeth.
You're not running out of me, are you?
Sorry, no, I was just...
No, it happens all the time. Whoa, it's like somebody's keeping the tooth fairy busy.
Yes, you can say that.
Shall we?
Oh, sure.
Listen, Mary, I know coming to the dentist can be frightening, but I want to let you know we're not monsters.
Speak for yourself.
Oh, you. Sue, this is Mary. Mary Sue.
Hi. I just don't see why I have to have my teeth pulled. They feel perfectly fine.
Sure, sure. Your teeth feel fine now. You know, dentistry's come a long way since your small parents got their teeth ripped out in the back of a barn.
My parents didn't grow up
there. Recent advancements in modern dentistry have rendered the process practically painless. Came right off. Few tugs of this and you'll hardly remember we had this conversation.
It's like helping yourself to a nice bottle of wine.
Or 10. Okay. So, Mary, what do you say? Yeah, that's right.
Deep breaths through the nose.
That's right. How does that feel, Mary? A little woozy?
Yeah, a little.
Sorry about that. Third molar, Sue. Okay. It's num-num time. Wide now. Wide. Good. Okay. There. Just a prick and a burn. You know, you have beautiful teeth. Has anyone told you that? Mm-mm. Sue, you've got to see this. Up, 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 open, open. There we go. Wide, 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 wide. Okay, very still now. Did we ever tell you the original story of the tooth fairy?
Mm-mm.
No?
Mm-mm.
Creepy stuff. And all done. I'm gonna give that a moment to settle. Anyhow, original tooth fairies were a sight different than the winged women we often think of today. Winged. Is that a word? Originally, they were called the Bone Gru, a mighty race of creatures that lived beneath the earth and fed on the bones and teeth of the dead.
They ate bones?
And teeth. See, a child would lose a tooth and the parents would bury it in the ground. And the Gru would sense it and they would be appeased.
Most of my reoccurring dreams were about me losing my teeth, and that was one of my fears growing up. And lo and behold, that's what happened.
Yep. You brought it upon the universe.
I did. In July, I did have a dental surgery where I had full removal of my upper and lower teeth. From July to, let's say, about October, the end of it, maybe? Actually, mid-November.
Mid-November, you had half of your new teeth.
Dentures.
Dentures, correct.
But I had to learn how to maneuver and manipulate my mouth, my words, even learn how to reuse my tongue to learn how to speak again. I had not only a lisp, but it felt like my jaw was drooping whenever I would speak. Those of us that have had this kind of surgery, we know what it's like, where it feels like our jaw is like falling. Now, with the dentures, I finally have the full upper and lower dentures. I'm learning how to speak all over again.
Yes.
In the beginning, I actually talked to one of our friends about this, where she said, yeah, you had pretty strong S's. I would hear it on the podcast, and that was maybe a little quirk that I had with my voice. I didn't mind it. I kind of liked it. Now my S's are very soft, but sometimes there's a whistle, just sometimes, and that is where I need to learn how to start speaking again. So it's like you were saying, you have to slow down the speech.
Yeah.
I especially have to slow down when I say my S's. And right now I'm noticing it, so I'm pushing my tongue out more. It's a weird feeling. But I don't think anything is weirder than remembering what the surgery was like.
Which was like what?
Imagine, if you will.
I'm going with you on this ride.
You're laying back on the dentist chair, and yes. How many people out there have a phobia where they're laying on the chair and they have all these tools being stuck in their mouth and the sounds of the drill. They told me I was going to be put under anesthesia, general anesthesia, which means I wouldn't feel pain. I would be somewhat asleep. Whoops. But there would be times, moments where maybe I would open my eyes and I would know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
There were many times where I opened my eyes and I knew what was going on. Seeing the surgeon and his assistants reaching over me with these extracting tools was
intense.
Mm-hmm. Feeling my teeth being pulled, there was no pain. That they were right about. But feeling the pressure of my teeth being pulled and seeing them. Oh, you're going to hear this.
I know I am. I'm going to listen to it with you.
So morbid.
It's so bad. I hate the dentist.
Wait until you hear the audio clips.
You recorded it?
You know what? They wouldn't let me. And they wouldn't let me keep my teeth because of biohazards.
You can't just say a sentence like that and then just keep going.
I asked them, can I keep my teeth? And they said two things. One, no, because of health hazards. They discard the teeth. Two, why would you like to keep your teeth?
Why would you like to keep your teeth?
I said, I am a co-host of a podcast about morbid things, and I am a very morbid person.
Okay.
And I enjoy certain things, and keeping my teeth was one of the things that I wanted to do.
I can't even imagine what it must feel like to be somebody else and come upon a box of just teeth in your house.
Let's talk about that. I do have a very tiny little jar.
With your baby teeth in it?
Nope. With some of the teeth that did crumble.
Oh, God.
Because it was a big piece of it, so it was almost like a whole tooth. And I put it in the tiny jar, and sometimes I look at it.
Are you reminiscing over teeth?
Over having teeth. Mind you, it's a very clean jar.
I hope so.
They're my teeth. But there's something about having my teeth in a little jar that I don't mind. I like seeing little things like that in jars. Maybe not everybody's teeth, because there are some teeth that you just shouldn't look at.
What psychopaths say to their friends for 800, Alex?
That's another episode.
All in itself,
where we're going to talk about
weird collections.
Weird collections. And also, we're going to try to find out which one of us is indeed a psychopath. I think it's Q.
I don't know, guys, if you guys just heard how she has her own baby teeth. Not even baby teeth.
It's not baby teeth, my adult teeth.
It would have almost been better had it been baby teeth.
I used to have one baby tooth, but I can't find it.
Oh, God.
But that's something that Cubans apparently do keep, are the baby teeth. They make earrings out of them and they pass it down to their children.
Yes, and that
or necklaces.
Is so horrible. And maybe we should do an episode on morbid cultural norms and traditions, like, because not every culture saves baby teeth and makes them into earrings. That's a specific Latin thing. And I don't even know, in all honesty. Now I am curious about why they do that and what that is supposed to mean. I'm not sure.
Maybe keeping literally a part of your childhood.
No, but they're passing it down, so you're keeping somebody else's childhood.
It's a very common thing that parents, I don't know if they still do it. I don't have children, so I wouldn't know. But they would keep the umbilical cords in the baby albums.
Yes. Yes, that is a thing.
You should see the face right now that Q is making, where she is grabbing her eyes and her face and scrunching it.
Because I'm pretty sure my mom has my umbilical cord in a scrapbook.
And yet I'm the one who's being questioned about my teeth.
I didn't keep the umbilical cord for myself.
I'm going to visit your mom.
You should. She could use it.
Maybe mom can send us that picture so we could use it for Instagram or Twitter.
If she even knows where it is. My mom doesn't know where half her stuff is.
But she might have the umbilical cord.
Probably.
That would be fantastic.
It's been a while since we've recorded, and our last episode was about mass shootings after the Parkland shooting that had taken place. And I wish that I could say that no mass shootings have happened since, but that's not the case. We had a lot.
These are the worst mass shootings in the United States so far this year.
And we did just get the news that he was one of the 11 that were hit and killed last night.
The deadly attack at a bar in Thousand Oaks, California is the most recent mass shooting. 12 people, not including the shooter, died.
We heard a couple shots. I told, you know, her to get down, all my friends to get down. We went in behind the, we stayed behind the stage, got out, went through the kitchen, went through the back door. She got out. I went in, got some more people to get out. And just to, we just tried to get out, get behind a car, get behind something, and then
yeah, we just tried to take cover.
On February 14th, Valentine's Day, a former student opened fire inside Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. 17 students and teachers were killed, and 17 more were hurt.
My 14-year-old baby, I sent her to school yesterday. She was supposed to be safe.
Several student survivors have become public figures in a movement to stop gun violence.
Since the time that I came out here, it has been 6 minutes and 20 seconds. The shooter has ceased shooting and will soon abandon his rifle, blend in with the students as they escape, and walk free for an hour before arrest. Fight for your lives before it's someone else's job.
On October 27th, a man who professed his hatred for Jews online entered the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He killed 11 congregants and 7 were hurt during Shabbat services.
During the course of his deadly assault on the people of the synagogue, Bowers made statements regarding genocide and his desire to kill Jewish people.
We are a resilient city. We have been knocked down, and we found ways to stand back up.
On the morning of May 18th, a student at Santa Fe High School in Texas fired off a weapon in art class.
It was a school shooter, and at this time we've heard probably 4 or 5 shots, and said the school shooter came out and he saw him. He was in a black trench coat, had a sawed-off shotgun.
10 students and teachers were killed. 13 people were hurt.
I was terrified because I didn't know if I was going to make it out or not. That's what was rushing through my head the whole time.
On September 12th, a man shot and killed 5 people at several locations near Bakersfield, California. He then shot himself as he was being approached by police. Cops believe the incident stemmed from domestic dispute. There have been 9 other shootings this year in which 5 people have died, including those working for a newspaper in Annapolis, Maryland. And there have been 9 shootings in which 4 people have died. The nonprofit Gun Violence Archive estimates that more than 300 people have died in mass shootings in the United States in 2018.
I guess I don't know if we're ever going to get to a place where that doesn't happen. We also had, it kind of happened after we recorded, a bridge collapsed here that killed 6 people, which was pretty crazy. It was by the university, Florida International University.
Now to our top stories of 2018 here in South Florida, stories that stayed with everyone on their minds long after they first happened.
That includes our reporting crews here. In March, FIU's new 950-ton pedestrian bridge collapsed onto Southwest 8th Street, crushing cars below and killing 6 people. CBS4's Rutabe Shabazi remembers that day vividly.
I got a text message that day from my friend who works at FIU, and she had texted me that a bridge had come down. She didn't say anything about people being under it or anyone being hurt, but then that's when I saw the emails start to come in on my phone, one after another. I realized that this was actually a really big deal.
The whole bridge is down across the whole side of 8th Street.
We were already covering the tragedy live by the time I got to the station. And in a situation like this, you're trying to figure out what's happening along with everyone else who's seeing the video with you. We had crews on the ground, we had a view from above from Chopper 4, and we began carrying live interviews on the air with different agencies and emergency responders who were giving us little bits of information.
Rocky wounded, one patient on the backboard, another one being put on the backboard. I got at least 145 that I can see in a car. The other car, I cannot get to or confirm patients.
We were talking to witnesses who were describing just this unbelievable scene.
I heard like an explosion. I didn't know what it was. I told my mom something happened.
Very, very traumatic. And I think
I think a lot of people aren't going to forget this.
Crews were brought in. They were bringing in dogs and searching through the rubble, and the cars beneath that rubble were just completely crushed. We were carrying this coverage live all through the afternoon into the evening for hours on end. And I do remember the sun setting and getting word that people had indeed lost their lives. And it was just such a tragedy, such a freak occurrence, because it could have been any of us, people just going about their day, driving to their destinations, and so many lives were just changed forever in an instant. And that is a day that none of us here at CBS4 will forget, a day that left a mark on the whole South Florida community and everyone with ties to FIU.
That was intense.
That was really crazy. There's so many people that I personally know that drive down that road that go to that school. I know someone who drove under it and did see cracks, but that was crazy. It was like calling everybody you know, and that's literally the area in which I live is near FIU.
We're
like 20 minutes away from FIU.
Exactly.
So it's a lot of people that it was like immediately like calling people if they just happened to be going down that road.
My grandfather had actually a dental appointment near there, and it was shortly after it had happened. And I remember driving, I think it was back home, that I drove under another bridge and traffic was stuck right under it. And I just, the panic attack that I had.
Yeah, for a while, every time I would see the overpass bridges or walkways, I'd either step on the gas to go underneath them quickly or refuse to be stuck underneath it. I'm either going to be behind it or in front of it. And that's just that.
Now, I find it amazing how events like that, like the shootings that have happened, how it affects, I mean, obviously the victims are the first ones affected the most. But it also has some type of a national post-traumatic effect on people.
Well, yeah, like especially here when the bridge happened, it's one of those things that now you realize how many bridges there are and how you almost had this false sense of security that it is done, it's good to go. And I think that was like a hard realization of like nothing is safe when you think about it in that aspect. Yeah, lots of things happen. I know the very big case that everybody was talking about when it comes to the true crime world was the case of Christopher Watts.
Wow.
That seemed to have gotten a lot of media attention and national attention with regards to him and whether or not he killed his wife and two kids. Pretty sad story.
Chris Watts. W-A-T-T-S.
What's going on right now around your house?
Right now it's got K-9 units, the sheriff's department. Everybody's like they're doing their best right now to figure out like if they can get a scent and see where they went. If they went on foot, they went in a car, or they went somewhere. And right now it's just like they've been on point, they're going through the house trying to get a scent, and hopefully they can pick something up to where it's gonna lead to something.
What happened?
She came home from the airport 2 a.m. and I left around 5:15. She was still here. And like about 12:10 in that afternoon, her friend Nicole showed up at the door. Like I had texted Shanann a few times that day, called her, say, you know, but she never got back to me, but she wasn't getting back to any of her people as well. And that's what really concerned a lot of people is like, she's not getting back to her, like if she doesn't get back to me, that's fine. Like she gets busy during the day. But she didn't get back to her people, which was very concerning. And Nicole called me when she was at the door, and that's when I came home. And then walked in the house, and nothing was vanished. Nothing was here. I mean, she wasn't here. The kids weren't here. Nope, nobody was here.
What's your wife's name?
Shanann. S-H-A-N-A-N-N.
What's your kids?
Bella and Celeste.
How do you spell Celeste?
C-E-L-E-S-T-E.
How old are your daughters?
Four. Bella's four, Celeste is three.
And so, how many times did you try calling her?
I called her three times, texted her about three times, just to say, you know, what's going on. Like I did, because after I called her and texted her once, it was like, maybe she was just busy. Like she'd just gotten back, you know. Like everybody's probably calling her from her trip. She just got back from Arizona, and I figured just she was just busy. But when her friend showed up, that's what it was like. It registered. Like, all right, this isn't right.
She just took off, do you think?
I mean, right now I don't even want to just like throw anything out there. Like I hope that she's somewhere safe right now and with the kids.
The man convicted of killing his pregnant wife and two daughters in Colorado has been sentenced to life in prison. The mother of Christopher Watts' wife, Shanann, explained why she didn't want him to face the death penalty.
So not only did you take the family of four, your family of four, you took your own life. I want the world to know that our daughter and her children were so loved by us. They will always be protected by God and his mighty angels. I didn't want death for you because that's not my right. Your life is between you and God now, and I pray that he has mercy for you. From Shanann's mother, Bella Marie, Celeste Catherine, and Nico Lees, Nana. Thank you, Your Honor.
Watts will not have a chance for parole. The judge called the crime the most, quote, inhumane and vicious he had ever seen in his career. In addition to murder charges, he also pleaded guilty to one count of unlawful termination of a pregnancy and three counts of tampering with a deceased human body. CBS News national correspondent Mark Strassman has been following the trial from Greenlee, Colorado. Mark, thanks for joining us. You know, did today's sentencing give us any possible insight into why Christopher Watts may have committed this heinous crime?
Tanya, why, of course, is the great unanswered question here. And I think everybody who walked into this courtroom for this sentencing hearing walked out not having any greater understanding of what exactly was going through Christopher Watts' mind and heart when he now admits that he murdered his wife, who was pregnant, 15 weeks pregnant with their unborn son, and also their two young daughters. I mean, look, Tanya, this was a sentencing hearing. The headline here is three consecutive life sentences with no possibility of parole.
And then we found a case that we posted about on our Facebook page that we thought that was rather interesting, which was about the Uber driver who was committing murders in between rides because his rides were his alibi.
That, for me, and I'm going to say this very carefully, extremely carefully, I don't condone it at all. I don't think it is anything positive. There's nothing positive about it. However, is it sort of almost borderline brilliant?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I could say that I'm not surprised by this information. I think that it is borderline brilliant. If you're going to be a criminal, if you're going to be a serial killer, you want to think of the best way to do that thing you've chosen to do. I thought that it was rather interesting to do it in between rides because your alibi is you were on your way to go pick up or drop off said person. I did want to know if there was at any point a body in the vehicle whenever he picked someone up. I feel like that would be a very... That's just a weird curiosity that I have. Like, can you imagine being in an Uber car unknowingly to you, there's a body in the trunk?
Now, you asked me this before tonight where I have to take Uber home.
Just, you know what you should do? Act like if you have luggage, tell them that you need to pop open the trunk because you need to put something in there. And then you do a quick check, you know? What it did was it allowed him to create an alibi. Because at a time of the murder, he was on the way to go pick up this person. So it enabled him, in a way, to have an easy way to not be suspicious because he's also just in the area to pick somebody up. I will say that Uber almost now lends itself to being a little bit more difficult. We all see those crime shows and documentaries and all of that. It's always a triangular pattern. They never leave their comfort zone and so on and so forth. But when you're an Uber driver, and if your victim of choice is just a random victim of choice, it almost leaves you with an open playing field.
Yeah, there's really no pattern.
Right.
It says in the article that I was reading that four women were killed in the parking lot of a Cracker Barrel restaurant. Another one was looking at a pickup truck in a dealer's lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ballsy. But it did, reading that and doing things like that, we did want to start kind of almost interviewing some Uber drivers because things happen in those cars that, I mean, let's just be real. Uber doesn't know what they're picking you up from, right? So I say that like in a lot of ways. So this Uber driver, for example, was a person who was also killing people in between picking up his rides. So there was a lot of people who got into a car with a killer after he had just killed and got home safely to their destination. He was a responsible driver, for lack of anything else. I wonder how many Ubers were, it was in reverse, where they're just picking somebody up and unbeknownst to them, they're picking up somebody who's trying to get away from somewhere, who've just committed a crime. Because that's another really quick way to get out of something in a car that's not yours, that if anybody sees you jumping into the vehicle, they're going to come to find out that it's an Uber.
Well, it's like the new getaway car.
Right. I mean, I guess they could get your account, but I mean, it's just how would they... I don't know. I feel like there's might be a crazy story of an Uber driver out there who didn't know what he was picking up to find that some guy was full of blood sitting in his back seat. If you're listening and you are an Uber driver and you have a very crazy story, something that you felt suspicious about when you picked somebody up, or you managed to, I don't know, drive to go pick someone up in the middle of a crime happening or something like that, please hit us up. You can email us. We would love to hear your story. We would love to put it on air because I'm super curious as to what madness people have encountered with just a ride. I mean, that HBO show, the taxi cab show on HBO used to be amazing just to watch how many drunk people, taxi cab confessions. And now people are doing that in other people's personal cars. Like, that's what's happening now. You've chosen to put yourself in this weird situation.
I want to read this quick paragraph about his last name is Dalton. So it says the 48-year-old Dalton answered yes to a series of questions, admitting that he shot 8 people at 3 locations. After his arrest, police quoted Dalton as saying a devil figure on Uber's app was controlling him on the day of the shooting. So he was being controlled.
He shot all these people on the same day? I guess it comes into a place that if he's setting himself up to say that he was insane at the moment that this all happened, so that he can use that as a defense, then the question will come into play as whether or not Uber has a good screening process when it comes to choosing who represents them and drives for them. Because one thing is to look at an insurance record and making sure that you're not into accidents, but you could be a person who has mental illness but happens to also be a good driver. Like that.
Very
that,
true,
that,
yes.
That's so I'm wondering if this later on down the line will cause Uber to change its screening process for drivers.
Nearly 3 years after the people of Kalamazoo were traumatized by the shooting spree that left 6 people dead and 2 others hurt, the trial is about to begin.
Barton Dieters has been talking to the man looking to put accused killer Jason Dalton behind bars for the rest of his natural life and tells us what to expect. Barton?
Well, Brian, Sue, it was a bloody incident that gained national attention. And now at last comes a jury and a trial and where it all started February 20th of 2016. Jason Dalton has been sitting in the Kalamazoo County Jail for 2 years, 10 months, and 12 days, facing 6 charges of murder, 2 charges of attempted murder.
We'll be asking the jury to return a guilty verdict on each one of those charges.
The surreal nightmare started just before 6 p.m. when police say 45-year-old Dalton shot 25-year-old Tiana Carruthers multiple times near her home in Richland Township. Police say Dalton was picking up fares in his capacity as an Uber driver for about 4 hours before stopping at the Sealy Auto Group on Stadium Drive, where he's accused of fatally shooting down 17-year-old Tyler Smith and Tyler's father, 53-year-old Rich. Just minutes later, police say Dalton drove to the nearby Cracker Barrel restaurant, where he allegedly shot and killed Judy Brown, Barbara Hawthorne, Mary Jo Nye, and Mary Lou Nye. There, he also wounded 14-year-old Abigail Koff. Within 2 hours, Dalton was arrested during a traffic stop in downtown Kalamazoo. Dalton would claim in a statement to police that the Uber app, quote, literally took over his mind and body. In the years that followed, Dalton had a psychiatric review that found him competent to stand trial, and his defense has successfully challenged some of the evidence Kalamazoo County Prosecutor Jeffrey Getting wanted to include.
There has been some delays in the process brought about by the issues with regard to evidence's admissibility.
But Getting says the delays will ensure the conviction sticks.
I'd much rather take the time on the front end of this to make sure that we get this case handled the right way versus trying to undo something that down the road.
He says while the surviving victims and families of the slain have been patient, the beginning is welcome for both them and the state.
Yeah, they're ready for this case to go too.
You're doing this voluntarily of your own free will?
Yes, I've wanted this for quite a while.
It took me a little by surprise because throughout our discussions, he was intent on going to trial. Though I think he was influenced these last few days by his family. He didn't want to put his family through it, as well as the family of the victims.
A conviction of murder carries the statutory, it's not discretion on the part of the court, statutory punishment of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. You understand that?
Yes.
The why question is one that haunts us. You know, everybody wants to know. Mr. Dalton will have an opportunity at allocution at sentencing, as will the victims and their families. I don't know if he will ever say why.
So, with all of that, this is just an episode to kind of catch you guys up, let you guys know why we have been gone for all this time and what we've been up to and what we have planned. We're still going to close out season two, even though we took a sabbatical, if you will. We're going to close out season two. Penn, in the interim when you had no teeth, I'm sure you watched a lot of things. Guys, if you don't know that, I'm going to crack on Penn for a little while. That's our friendship. That's our friendship. Did you watch any interesting documentaries or listen to any true crime podcasts, series?
One thing I did see prior to my surgery, and actually after the surgery, was a lot of dental surgeries on YouTube. Never
do
that.
Why would you do that to yourself?
See, morbid curiosity takes you to places on the internet that are very dark.
I know, but I think that I think maybe after I got my surgery, I could see myself doing that. But I think before, I would just be psyching myself out for that.
Here's the thing. For me, I did the same thing with gastric bypass, even though back then it wasn't such a popular surgery. I was probably one of the first, not first ones to get that surgery, but it was during the years where it had just
taken off.
Yeah, taken off and started happening. But I would research, for example, stomach surgeries. I would research things about happening with the stomach, and I'd find, oh my goodness, images of guts just coming out of the stomach after surgery, stitches exploding. This is how I feed my brain. Did you just gag?
No, because you were talking about like your intestines and all of that, and then you were talking about how you were feeding your brain, and my brain.
You went mixy
matchy things of bad things. Yes. Guys, I'm sick. I don't know if you could hear my voice. I'm also sick, but I was not going to cancel this recording. I was excited to be back. So I'm
sick.
As
am
so,
I.
Maybe some things I say today make very little sense.
Well, between your N's and M's. What is it?
Morbid.
And my lisps. And holding on to my dentures, making sure they don't come off and hit the microphone.
We are an auditory amazement right now.
Or an auditory oddity.
Oddity. Did you watch any movies, documentaries, or anything like that while we were on break?
Many.
Other than the dentist stuff and the teeth stuff that we're not going to get into?
I did watch one about postpartum.
Okay.
Depression and postpartum psychopathy. I think is the correct way to say it. It's called When the Bow Breaks. Very strong documentary.
You want to tell them?
I'm going to save that one for the next episode that we do, which we chose out of a hat.
Correct. The order of the next three episode topics, basically.
Which will be about postpartum, and they do call it postpartum disorder because it could either be psychopathy or depression.
Also, not to be confused, and what we'll also discuss, known as the maternity blues. That'll be our next episode after this. I actually have not seen... Have you seen You? Everybody's going crazy about the Netflix series You, about the stalker and all that other stuff. Have you seen that?
Well, no, now I want to. I have seen the link on Netflix about it. I just haven't clicked on it. I've been watching Escape at Dannemora, which is with Patricia Arquette and Benicio del Toro. It's on Showtime, and it's a I think it's a limited series. I'm not sure. It's about the small, sleepy town of Dannemora, which is home to the Clinton Correctional Facility, a maximum security prison.
What year does this story take place?
The 2015 Clinton Correctional Facility escape took place on June 6, 2015, when two inmates, Richard Matt and David Sweat, were discovered missing during a 5:17 a.m. bed check at the maximum security Clinton Correctional Facility. So they had dug out a tunnel out of the prison with tools that they got from two cooperating prison employees. They're also showing how the correctional officers that are in the prison have a way of bargaining with the prisoners to get them things that they want, but also at the same time giving the prisoners, certain prisoners, privileges. So I believe that's how they're getting into what the case was about. It's probably privileges and things that they were able to get away with.
Right.
How about you? What podcasts are you listening to? Any books that you can consider morbid, or shows, films, etc.?
I took a bit of a true crime break for a little while over the holidays, sort of. I got really caught up in books and reading, and so I wasn't listening to podcasts as much because I was doing audiobooks instead so that I could keep up with my plethora of books, if you will. But I did catch up. I stayed true fans to the ones that I've been listening to for as long as I have. I caught up on all Criminal episodes. They just went over 100 episodes during our break. I also caught up with Ear Hustle, which was actually pretty cool. One of the main co-hosts was finally released. He was given furlough. So it was interesting to get to the end of their most recent season and him be working for Radiotopia outside of San Quentin.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that podcast?
Ear Hustle?
Yes.
Ear Hustle was a podcast that started in San Quentin prison with one of the inmates and one of the women who, Nigel, who worked for the prison, and she was also originally a graphic designer. So they started a podcast there talking about the things that happen within prison, at least within St. Quentin, because San Quentin is a different prison than most that you will hear about. They have a little bit more, if you're going to be in prison, that's a good prison to be in. They have programs such as, you know, an AV room where these gentlemen can do radio shows. They play the podcast over their radio shows there. They have classes. They have a place on site for you to have family time, which will give you like the weekend kind of like better visitation rights and things of that nature. And with the main host, Erlon, actually ended up getting furlough and was actually released. And Radiotopia immediately gave him a job. So he's now a podcaster out of prison. So it's pretty cool.
Wow.
I thought you listened to Ear Hustle. I didn't know you didn't listen to Ear Hustle. So, yeah, I caught up with that. And Court Junkies, I'm a big fan of Court Junkies, especially because I'm always interested into how law and how lawyers and prosecutors and judges and juries will determine a case. And that's what Court Junkies is all about. It's about the court proceedings of a famous murder or crime that most people are interested in. And I haven't caught up on Sword and Scale or Generation Y or any of those other ones because it's too much right now for me to catch up on everything. I've been reading a lot of books, which I happen to like, thriller, dramatic fictions. I'm a big reader on that. So if you're interested in that, you can ask me questions on Twitter about what I'm reading in that realm by tweeting me at @QTheMike on Twitter.
And that's also something that we're going to be doing a lot more of this year, especially, is telling you what we're reading, what we're watching, what we're listening to, especially the things that get pretty dark. Because we can get dark.
Yes, we can. So that's it for me. I'm glad to be back. I'm really excited about our next episode. I'm excited to just be recording again and getting back into researching. I enjoy that thoroughly. And as always, make sure you follow us on Instagram, on Facebook, and on Twitter at Morbid Pod. You can follow me on Twitter at @QTheMike or on Instagram at @QCeption. That's right. Qception.
We're not even going to ask why.
Nope.
But you will talk about your obsession with that movie one day.
Yeah.
Which I haven't seen.
No, I can't even. I can't do that. So where can they follow you, Penn?
You can follow me at, and listen very carefully because it sounds like I'm yodeling. It's Yo, Y-O, the lady, who, W-H-O, on Instagram. And that's where I'm at mostly, is on Instagram. On Facebook, you can follow me by my name, Penn, P-E-N-N, Aragon. And Twitter, I'm not even going to get into, but it probably is Yo, the lady, who knows? I don't twit a lot.
And just so that you guys never forget what her handle is, when you say it very fast, it sounds like,
exactly that, and that is why it's my handle. And I've had many handles, but that's the one that I like the most. So again, it's Yolehihu on Instagram. Don't tweet me, please, because very dark things have happened to me on Twitter, and maybe one day I'll talk about it. But you know who you are.
Stay curious, stay morbid, and look out for the next episode.
I've missed you guys very much.